You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, Future You gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future You goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
So it's been an interesting couple of days. First of all, I got sick on my birthday, which is never fun. It's just a cold, I think, but, you know, just a cold. It's still, my head hurts. It's all clogged. I mean, my throat's getting raspy. But, okay, you know, you deal with it. It's winter. It goes from 10 degrees to 60 degrees to 10 degrees and all over the map. So, okay. Then I was, you know, by myself yesterday, basically. I mean, I was with the team, but not that the team's going to celebrate my birthday. So it was really nice, though. They did a really cool thing in Boston. I didn't know that. If on your birthday you go into just about any store and you tell them it's your birthday and then you give them some money, they'll let you take merchandise. So that was really cool. So I did that in like four or five different stores. I went in and they really didn't respond much to the merchandise.
It's a lovely Beantown tradition.
You got to... It's a very nice thing. So I bought, you'll, you guys all have had it on Twitter soon because I know you'll want to see it. I got not one but two bobbleheads. There's a Cheers store there. I got a Sam Malone bobblehead of him serving two beers. That's pretty cool. And then I got a Founding Father bobblehead. I got Benjamin Franklin. So I got a Ben Franklin and a Sam Malone bobblehead, which I'm quite certain everybody in the bobblehead museum at my office will enjoy because Sam will serve them refreshments and Ben Franklin can give them adages about how to live their life. So, and maybe they'll...
And also drink those, you know, alcoholic beverages.
Well, there you go. So they're really, you won't be that tempted. They're little tiny ones. They're bobble sized. So I got that, and I got a little book on Boston history because I love to read stuff like that. It's not very big, so just light reading. And I got a there's a leather store. There's a store all handmade stuff, you know. So I got that. I ate lunch in the oldest continuously operating restaurant in the country, so they say. It's called the Oyster House or something. It's right near Faneuil Hall and Quincy Market, and it's been open since 1826. And they still have some of the original waitstaff. No, that's not true. But they, so I had, of course, you go to Boston, you're going to have that. I had clam chowder. You had to have chowder. So I got chowder and some Boston baked beans. That was fantastic. I bought some tea. You can't go to Boston and not get tea. I asked the saleswoman if I was, you know, required to throw it in the bay. She said no, so that's good. So I'll be making that tea when I get home tonight because I need it for my throat. And I got a nice souvenir, you know, a little case, a little knick-knack case from the restaurant, that place as well. All of them celebrating my birthday, which was delightful. All I had to do was just go in, tell them it was my birthday, and just give them a little money. And I, basically anything that in the restaurant I could buy. So that was very cool. So really celebrated my birthday. That was nice. Then I got here. This never happens to me. I am not the guy. I'm the guy who gets on and talks about bad beats. I got here at 11:15, and, you know, Locke was doing fine. He didn't need any help on his show. So I said, well, I'm going to go over and just see what's going on. And they had a $5 crap table. It's usually 10. It's gone up to 10 now. I was, $5 craps is fun because, you know, it's really affordable. So I walked to the table, and I had some money in my pocket, but all I did was put $10 on the table. And the guy, I got there at 11:10. I had to ask to leave to get over here. He shot for 45 straight minutes. Same guy. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
So I was not playing aggressively. I was like, I'm not going to lose my money. Had I been playing aggressively, it's always the gambler's lament. But I was like, this is fun. I'm winning. I'm just standing here. And so at the end, they needed to bring more chips in. So I couldn't, as they say in the casino, color up. So I put them down to color up. And I said, ma'am, I'm sorry. I got to go to work. So she said, that's okay. I'll tell them. So I walked over here with, I showed Locke because he was suitably, as a fellow gambler, and suitably impressed. So there are three stacks of red chips sitting in front of me. They're $5 chips because, like I said, I didn't play crazy. I was just betting $5. It was a $5 table. I was betting, making the bet, and and you know, taking the odds on the pass line, and I'd take the 6 and the 8, and I didn't do anything crazy. And the dude shot for 45 minutes, and so I am already having a very profitable day. Trust me. I don't even know how much is here, but trust me, it's a lot more than I put down on the table. So that was a great start. So it was a nice birthday, and I'm just sorry I'm sick, but nice of the wonderful places in Boston just for announcing your birthday and giving them, you know, some money that they let you take back. So I got some wonderful presents.
You ran into Damian Lee too, right?
From Nick. And then the Damian Lee story is, I said to Paul, I said, that looks like that's not, Danny Ainge was sitting literally right next to us. We were at the broadcast table, and he had his elbow on the table. That's where he was sitting. And so he kept making hand gestures to somebody. And I said, who the hell is he, you know, waving to or making gestures to? And I said, Paul, I think that's Damian Lee. And he had his back to us at that point. So Paul said, really? I said, yeah. So I said, it would make sense. I think the Warriors are playing the Celtics. And then, of course, I checked, and they are. They're playing tonight. And he turned around and was definitely Damian. So at halftime, he got up to go walk somewhere, and we caught his eye and waved, and he came over, said hello. I chatted, and I put it on Twitter. I hope people understood the second tweet. While it was very nice that he said happy birthday, I was not like some little kid, like, I get Damian Lee to say happy birthday. It was in reference to the first tweet. The first tweet said, which was true, I said, just caught up with Damian Lee. He's at the Warriors in town to play the Celtics. And everything I said, it was true. His leg, I asked him how his leg is. He said, it feels fine. He's got no problems with it. I said, how about the guys who were injured on rehab? He said, they all seem to be doing great. We're looking forward to having him back. And I said, he looks great. And then I said, and then he wished me a very happy birthday. And then I put editor's note. The last line is a complete and total lie. He has no idea it's my birthday, but the rest of it is totally true. And it was. I thought it was funny. You know, why would he know it's my birthday? It was silly. I was obviously poking fun at that. So after the game, when they're road games, Chris doesn't come out to the table to do the interview. I go tape it in the locker room. So I walked in the locker room, and Damien's there again. So I see him, and, you know, he's getting ready to leave. I guess he had talked to the team, and so I was getting ready to talk to Chris. And as he's coming by, I said, it's great to see you again, Damian. You know, I'm glad. I was kidding him at halftime. I said, you got any eligibility left? Think the Cards, maybe they can use you, because that first half wasn't great. So I said to him in the locker room, well, it's great. The Cards wound up not needing you tonight. And he laughed. He said, yeah. And then I said, well, it's good seeing you. I'm glad you're doing so well. Good luck. We said goodbye. He took a couple steps away. And then he turned around and he said, oh, by the way, happy birthday. I saw your tweet. So I thought that was funny because it was obvious I wasn't being mean or rude. I mean, why would he know it's my birthday? I was just kidding. So that's why. But I think some people interpret like, well, I got Damian Lee to say happy birthday. And I hope everybody understood the humor in it, such as it was that I put this bogus first tweet out and then he saw it and then responded to it. So that's what that was all about. So I talked with him. And he's doing very well. And I talked with Danny Ainge. And I have to be honest with you. I asked him, I said, can you tell me off the record some things? And so he did. And I said, it's off the record, so I can't betray that. But he's a very nice guy. And so we had a good visit. I assume he was there to see Jordan, but he didn't say as much. But I asked him some questions, and we'll leave it at that. Because, like I said, he didn't say it on the record. Well, he probably wouldn't. I don't think he'd care, my guess is. But, you know, I just thought I'd leave it at that. So there we go. I don't want to go beyond that. So that there we go. So that was my night. So it was a good night. And the Cards played a terrific second half. Came out of there with a great win. Thank goodness, because that is by far, well, except for Miami, but I didn't make that trip, the longest flight we have. And if you got to take that flight in the freezing cold and get back at 3 in the morning and you've lost, whoa, that is miserable. But they won, and so everybody was in good spirits and got on the plane and had a great trip home. And so there you go. So I didn't get to see any of the Kentucky game. It was going on while we were working. It was before our game, but, you know, Paul and I have the hour-and-a-half pregame show, and so we were following the score, but didn't see any of it. And I know they didn't have a great first half, and I know Vandy's not all that good, but a good second half. And Nick Richards, again, flexing his muscles and turn that game around. But both games have a similar narrative in that the first half people were less than dazzled. I can't speak to Kentucky, so I'm not trying to. If I say this about Louisville, it's not meant as a yeah, but let me contrast it. I have no idea why the first half for Kentucky was what it was. But I know what it was for Louisville. I don't know. You know, again, I'm speaking very carefully. Even Larry O'Bannon was tweeting, and the fans love that because, you know, there's a guy who knows basketball, and he's pointing out how they were not overly impressive in the first half. The only thing I'm really surprised at, maybe it's the NBA mentality in me, is if you watch an NBA game, this goes on all the time in the NBA, where a team that's considered the significant underdog has a lead. They the first half they control. Not only that, by the way, we have very short memories around here. You know, that was Pitino's modus operandi. I mean, the first half they would look very ordinary, and then, you know, second half he had them believing they were in great shape and they would wear you down and they blow games open. And people seemingly are forgetting that. That's just basketball. I'm not being an apologist. I'm just telling you, it's basketball. And so it was not, you know, Larry said they're playing down to their competition. It's a bad team. I disagree with a lot of that. I don't think they were playing down to anything. And BC looks like they have some bad numbers, because this is amazing how many people discuss stuff that they're not following. Their very best players were out early in the year. They've only gotten healthy in about the last 2 weeks. And since that time, they beat Virginia Tech, who everybody's saying what a good year they're having. They beat them. They were 3-1. Their overall record wasn't good because they lost some games early when, like I said, some players were good. But they're not a terrible team. And then here's the other thing. You know, the other guy has scholarships and coaches and video and staff, and they did a really good job. And I'm wondering, you know, that's a terrible team attacking pack line defense. Because I All right. Do you want me to go? Now you want me to go. We are here at Caesars, and it is, I will say this, I didn't even mention it at the top. I came around the corner where you used to have that big long walk to get to the area that led to the boat, and you come around the corner and boom, the casino's right there. I mean, you just, the minute you get out of the parking lot, it's right there, and it's beautiful. I mean, it really is it's a completely different level of experience than when it was on the boat. Not that the boat was bad, but wow. And obviously for sports wagering, I want to get back to the analysis of the game, and I will in a minute, but while we're in this vein, you should know this. We're in Boston, so I buy the Boston Herald, the newspaper. It's the only one they had at the newsstand, good or bad, but I wanted a paper. And there's an article in there, New Hampshire, little tiny New Hampshire, which is like the size of the Sportsdrome. Little tiny New Hampshire legalized sports wagering January 1st, and the month obviously just about to end. They've already made, for the state, $7.5 million. They made the Endeavor made $15 million. They're on a 50-50 split with DraftKings. DraftKings is managing it for them. They subleased it out, or whatever the hell you want to call it. And so they get half, and the state gets half. And it's way more than they projected. And they are just delighted. $7.5 million goes right into the, I think they're using it for education, I don't know, but tight New Hampshire. It's the size of a postage stamp. $7.5 million in a month. So, I mean, you know, if you don't want it for moral reasons, that's your business. But as I've said before, then don't use it. But there are a lot of people, obviously, I don't think New Hampshire is some godless state somewhere, and obviously a lot of people like it, and they're, you know, making it available, and it is just money waiting to be had. And, you know, so anyway, should I be talking about that today while we're here in Indiana? Because Indiana's perfectly fine, saying, hey, you do what you're doing over there. We'll be happy to have you guys hop over that bridge and come here, and it is worth the trip. It's spectacular. What they have done here is, I mean, whoever was in charge of the whole overseeing the project has got it right. I'll tell you why. In addition to moving the casino to where you first come in the parking lot, which makes it way more convenient, it looks terrific. It's really, really sharp looking. I mean, obviously, things new. It has a new vibe, but it looks great. And then the sports book, I'm sitting here in these wonderfully comfortable couches. I'd like to buy one for the house. And there are three. You've seen these TVs when they're that big. Each TV, quote-unquote, is basically nine, like, 72-inch TVs to make up one screen. So there's three of those. And then in addition to that, there's countless smaller, I call them smaller TVs, but they're pretty damn gigantic. And they have this thing where you can rent one of the, I guess you rent if you reserve it, I don't know if they ask the fee. I know Locke talked about it, but I'm sitting in one. You sit in a sofa, and you got two tables in front of you, and there's a PlayStation, and you have your own private big screen TV. There's beverage holders. It's like your own miniature little man cave. And I think they've already taken reservations for March Madness with good reason. What a great place to watch the games this would be. They have kiosks so you can go make your bets, and just spectacular. So I can vouch. Locke showed me his ticket. He bet the $100 all in one fell swoop that Travis Kelce will score a touchdown. It's just a little less than even money. If he wins, you put the whole 100 on it, you get 195 back. So pretty good. So with that, that's, you know, if they score, the Chiefs, you would think it will be Kelce who gets one of the touchdowns anyway. So I think I'm going to bet the $100 on the under. I think I'm going to make an under bet. Whether it's the whole 100 or not, I don't know. But that's the one New York Mike liked, and the guy from Washington Post, Neil Greenberg, liked. And San Francisco's defense is pretty good. And just my gut tells me the final score could be something like, you know, 28-23, 24-20. You know, even if team gets 30, they win 30-20. The over-under is 54. You know, 54, it might be 54 and a half. I don't know, I have to look. But, you know, 30-23 wins on the under. So I think that's the way I'm leaning. But yeah, this is a fun place, and there's great little, you know, not just for betting. There's a little kiosk behind me, the Cantita. They've got a Mexican-themed kind of, I hate to call it a snack bar because it doesn't do it justice. The food looks great. And, of course, all the beverages are complimentary here. There's coffee and soft drinks. And of course, at the table, if you're playing, they'll bring you a drink, and it's really, and this sports book is spectacular. I'm trying to see I see the kiosks over there. There's five of them right in front of the three screens that have the pro basketball odds, college basketball odds, and then they have a man counter as well. So, and using the machine, I like the machines, but if you don't, you can go and be helped by a customer service person, and they've got more screens. They have the Premier League soccer, they've got let me see, pro hockey. They've got all sorts of things up there that you can invest and have a rooting interest in the game. There's a couple of guys working behind the counter right now. So it's nice. I can tell you they got it right, and it's wonderful to see. I think it's a great addition. It didn't take me very long to get here. It's just if you like sports, you'll like this, because come on out in Caesars, and I had a chance to see some people already. I don't think they were here necessarily because I'm here, but they said hello as I was walking in and had a chance to chat with them. So very nice. Very nice place indeed, and so far off to a good day, especially thanks to that unnamed shooter who lost his mind at the crap table. That's when craps is fun, man. Woo, he was going wild.
All was right, it Grits and Gravy, or maybe Leonard Washington, or Ashy Larry?
No, he was, that's the thing, it was a very oddly suburban-looking kind of table. Everybody was very normal-looking, including the guy shooting. He was just very, you know, not soft-spoken, not just very normal. Like, you know, he would say what he wanted to say, and took the dice, and gave a, you know, he hit a number, quick clap, but wasn't over the top on anything. So
you didn't have like a crazy like rolling regimen or anything, like, you know, no.
The only thing he would do is if one of the dice went off the table, some people ask, I want the same dice. He wanted all five dice again. If one went out, he wanted all five dice. Then he would take them and roll them against the wall in front of himself, and based on that, he would make his pick. It's kind of like the tennis players who they want all the balls from the ball kids in the back, and they look and they pick the one they want to serve. So I don't know, but he was serving like freaking Djokovic. Why am I getting his name right?
Novak Djokovic.
Novak Djokovic. My God, I just completely dyslexied his name there. I turned him into Novak Djokovic, Novak Djokovic. You know, but
you should get the guy on the air. Track him down, have him come on, and then have him give his name, and then have him get robbed because he just won a ton of money.
Have the IRS call. Although it wouldn't be just him, of course. That's the beauty of craps. The guy next to me was two guys over was making the serious bank. The guy next to me, he was one of those crazy guys. Like, he would win, and then he just couldn't just slow down a little bit. And so he kept throwing it, and then he would play these one-roll bets, and he wouldn't win. The guy over from him was as disciplined as I've seen. He had all the numbers and a bet on the come line if you play crap. If you play craps, you know what I'm talking about. All the numbers he had, you know, the numbers, the 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10. He had basically had covered those, and then he would make a comeback, and then he would hit it, whatever the combat came, you know, if it was like a nine, then they do what they call up and down, or but I think that's what they call it, right? So you take, and he's taking the bet down, and he's back up with odds. So he's taking, in other words, the nine that he originally bet is coming down, and then he's putting that money back up on the nine he just rolled on the combat, and then he has odds. And so every roll, he had some action going, and the dude, then he had a couple of oddball, you know, hard ways working, and the guy, I mean, I don't, he must have had, I can't even fathom how much money he had in front of him, because I had my little, I mean, I had a nice little stash thanks to this guy getting hot, but I was playing, you know, five and six and occasional $10 bet. This guy, you know, he had $84 on things, and then I had all red chips in my little rack in front of me there. He had many colors, so I'll leave it at that. So good for him. This was not the roller. This was just the other guy by my side. But anyway, a lot of fun. But more importantly, come on out here, and you get a good meal.
All right, sorry about that, guys. A little bit of technical snafuery. I just made that word up. But we'll get Bobby V reconnected. He's coming to you from the boat at Caesars, Southern Indiana. We're going to have Peter Burns of the SEC Network joining us on the other side of this break. Appreciate your patience. We're going to do a little maintenance back here. But you're listening to The V-Show on the ESPN 680 105.7.
You're listening to The V-Show podcast. Listen to Bob Valvano weekdays noon to 3 only on ESPN 680 and online at ESPNLouisville.com.
Show with Bob Valvano is now right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Our next guest has been with us before and has a profile on Twitter that many can relate to. I'm not sure you can relate to the fact that he's an ESPN studio anchor for the SEC Network, but he was a college golfer that he lists as, calls himself, the worst bunker player in the history of college golf. Many people can relate to some problems in the sand. But Peter Burns will be with us here in just a moment or so, and we'll visit with him. And we'll talk about the SEC. We'll talk about Kentucky, who I did not see last night. But I know that they struggled in the first half and then came put it together in the second half. Eventually, I'd like to get to analyzing the game, but each time I've tried, we've been dropped here. So I hope that we'll be able to stay on the air. I don't know why Locke was evidently able to stay on the air effortlessly, but I haven't touched anything. But we got some issues. I'm not sure what they are, but we'll see if we can work them out. So, all right, let me see. Maybe if I move this, this might be, I don't know if it got up. If he laid the mic down and might have put the wire over this, that might have something to do with it. Let me take 1 second and twirl this around all my cold supplies. Get that out of the way. And I accomplished nothing by doing that. So, wow. All right. Well, oh, there I did it. Yay. Okay, everything was tangled. It's untangled. Maybe that'll help. I don't know. We'll see. Peter Burns with us from the SEC Network. Peter, thanks for being with us. I had a game of my own last night, so I didn't get to see the Kentucky game. The new thing is basketball has become like figure skating. We have judges. You can't just win. You've got to win, and you've got to get style points. You need to throw a triple salchow in there and maybe a toe loop or something. But, I mean, Vanderbilt's not that good, and I know they were behind at the half, and so there had to be some concern. But they wound up winning by some daylight at the end. And I'm curious what your thoughts were. How alarming was the first half? What did you take away from the game as a whole for Kentucky?
Yeah, there were zero triple Lutzes in the first half there for
Kentucky. Which is disappointing.
No, seriously, because they're the type of team that can do that, right? They can have the degree of difficulty. And I think that played part into that game yesterday is that, you know, Stackhouse and Vandy, heck, they had lost 24 straight SEC conference games. I mean, they're the bottom of the bottom. And I think Stackhouse just said, hey, coming in, let's just have fun. They played loose. And all of a sudden, I think Kentucky, kind of like how they did against Evansville, was just thought they could just show up at Rupp and take advantage advantage. And, you know, Vandy threw some zone at him, which was kind of interesting. And, you know, Nick Richards, who was going to probably go down as the SEC player of the year, he was held scoreless in that first half. But then they worked on some adjustments. I think Tony Barbary and the rest of the guys started yelling at the kids, and they got in the gear, and they did what Kentucky did. They, you know, got the ball down low. Richards, 15 and 11. But I think the most important part is when they want to play defense, they're extremely good. They held Vandy to no field goals in the last 5 minutes. Vandy made one of their last 11. In fact, missed their last 8 shots. So I think it's just a matter of for Kentucky, were they zoned in for this game? And when they did, they dialed it in, and that's why they ended up taking off at the end.
Now, you said, did they make a – I wasn't sure what you said. Did they play zone, or did you just say zoned in? Did they change defense a little bit?
No, actually, so both. So Vanderbilt played Kentucky with a little zone, kind of mixing it up a little bit. And then when Kentucky was down by as much as 11 at one point, all of a sudden, Cal actually went to zone, which is something very rare. Yeah, we don't ever see Cal do that. I think that went to just say, hey, listen, we got to show these guys a different look, because Vanderbilt was flat out making everything interrupt, and they just didn't care. So I think it was just, you know, Cal being able to say, hey, listen, when it comes down to it, we need to make a change defensively. Are we willing to do that? And when they did, I think it just threw Vandy a little off in their game. Then the wheels started getting wobbly, and then, you know, Emmanuel quickly played well, and then Tyrese Maxey, the freshman, answered the bell with 17 points, and then really they just got Nick Richards involved, and everything flows through Nick Richards. I mean, that's the deal. You guys have seen it. Y'all know Kentucky basketball. When you're getting the ball to Nick Richards and things are going well, they're damn tough to beat.
It's interesting, though, not to play the 2020 hindsight game, which is always easy when things work, but I've thought all along Kentucky's personnel should lend itself well to playing zone. They're long and they're athletic, mm-hmm. and, you know, they got some guys who can go rebound, and frankly, I thought the same for Louisville. That's another topic. We'll get into that elsewhere. And Louisville actually turned their game around by going zone. I don't know if you want to make a steady diet of it, but I don't know when it became such a bad word. Heck, you watch the Miami Heat now. They're playing it in the NBA. I mean, it fell out of vogue for some reason for so long, and I don't know why, and especially now with the three-point line backed up a little bit, I think right. If you got athletes, you can do some damage with it, and Kentucky did. But I think you're probably right. It's probably more just it's really hard to get up for a team that hasn't won a conference game since the Woodrow Wilson administration. You know, I mean, that's what you're looking at, basically.
But here's the deal. Going back to what you said the three letters, NBA, right? Like, the Heat run a little bit of zone, but outside of that, it's always traditionally been a man-to-man or, you know, maybe a little diamond here and there, but really mostly just man-to-man defense. And so I think for Cal, he's always looked at it and go, no, listen, you know, not zones for cowards by any means or anything like that, but he figures, hey, I'm teaching you to come to Kentucky to play NBA-style basketball here. And with the height differential and the athletic differential he normally has at Kentucky, you're right. I mean, if Cal was saying, hey, we're just going to play Syracuse-type zone, we're going to just rely on our size, and if you could beat this and the outside shot, good luck at Rupp Arena. He doesn't do that, and I'm wondering if that maybe starts saying, all right, this is another, at least, you know, tool I can use going forward, because I think now there is a little bit of anxiousness among Wildcat fans to think, hey, we got a great team. We love Cal. We love the players. We love all the McDonald's All-Americans. But when are we going to win another title? And I think it'd behoove him to take a look at every option going forward to see if he can actually cut down the net.
Peter Burns with us from ESPN's SEC Network. I mean, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. If you play a good zone, you've still got to be good at man-to-man principles. So when a guy's in your area, you've still got to be able to keep him in front of you. And frankly, mm-hmm. they're playing in the NBA. So if that's, I don't know that that's his reason, but if it were, I would respectfully disagree, because you're right. I mean, hell, everybody wants to win games. The kids want to win games. I mean, so it's not like if you play zone, now all of a sudden you compromise their whole chance to play in the NBA. I think that would be a little bit silly, but I don't know if that's his reason or not. So I just think he's been doing this a while. He's had his fair share of success. Guys are stubborn. I mean, he's stubborn about man-to-man. I think Chris Mack's a little bit stubborn. He loves the pack line. He believes in it, and so you play with what you believe in. But sometimes, as the cliche goes, more than one way to skin a cat, Peter.
Well, I mean, look at Ed. Going back to what we just saw in college football, like Ed Orgeron was always one certain way, and he really kind of decided, hey, you know what? I need to take how my coaching philosophy is out, and I need to ultimately change my program so I can win and adjust and adapt. And I don't think Cal's ever really had to adjust and adapt in the SEC, because outside of a couple good runs by Florida and a couple good runs by Arkansas, no one's really gone toe-to-toe with him each and every year. Everyone's just trying to, you know, out-recruit Cal, and that ain't going to happen in this league. So, to me, I think all these new coaches are bringing in new schemes and new adjustments. I think that's good, because it's kind of re-energized the SEC, who, frankly, I mean, listen, it was not fun covering this conference in basketball back in 2014, 2015. At least there's a couple of teams now that are a little bit more fun.
To that point, and I always give full disclosure, the listeners are probably sick of hearing it, but I'm far from Will Wade's biggest fan. But they're 7-0 right now, even though they are the lowest ranked of the three teams at the top of the SEC standings. LSU 7-0, UK 6-1, and Auburn 5-2. How do you rank those teams, regardless of what the pollsters are saying? What do you see both now and potentially for all three of them?
Listen, I'm with you, and I'm a kid born and raised in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I watch Chris Jackson and Shaquille O'Neal and Ricky Blanton and Vernell Singleton and the great Dell Brown coaching on the sidelines. So I loved LSU basketball growing up, and I can't get all on board with Will Wade for a bevy of different reasons. But what I can't disagree with is the fact of, in close games, they were stones, right? I mean, they were 6-0 going into last night, and they won all those games by a whopping combined 15 points. He just finds a way to make adjustments that Johnny Jones didn't back in the day, and the guys trust them. And now with Skylar Mays, a veteran, running the point, that's huge. They have athletes. They play aggressive-style basketball. Once again, they had five guys in double digits. They are legit. They are for real, because they're going to be a matchup issue that's not going away. And that last night against Nate Oates' squad, Alabama, who's still trying to find themselves in his first year in Tuscaloosa, that game was the first blowout that I looked at LSU, and I got texts from people during the game going, okay, maybe this is Auburn of last year. Maybe this is a team that, if they find the right matchups, can make a deep run. I still go Kentucky 1, LSU 2, and Auburn number 3. And frankly, I only think there's three good teams in the SEC. I think the rest of them is fair to average.
How many get in, though, do you think?
I mean, you got to think Mississippi State with Reggie Perry and the way Ben Howland's got that team rolling now. I think they get in. I was surprised that Arkansas lost to South Carolina, but I think they end up getting in. I think it might be just a six-bid league this year, because there is just a bunch of average. But I guess you could also say that about all of college basketball for the most part, really.
Absolutely.
That, the ACC is not having the year that we expect them. I mean, we're always looking up to the ACC here in the conference to think, like, all right, what are they doing? And when you see that North Carolina is falling, when you see Virginia losing to South Carolina earlier this year, you're thinking, well, this is kind of weird. So it's just an off year, but I think it's probably six bids is I think I'd be fair to say what the conference ends up landing.
Well, which actually makes it very interesting. I mean, not for K fans, because they are certainly going to be one of those three locks that you talked about. But the other three, I mean, I wouldn't sleep on Tennessee. I saw them play Kansas really well. No. Now that he got those guys in. I mean, never seen a year like that. I asked Rick Barnes. He said it's as odd a year as he's been involved in. All of a sudden, he made midseason trades. It was like, and he had that. And who knows? Nate Oates is a hell of a coach. We'll see what he's going to do. We've seen South Carolina do it before. And those teams all have winning conference records and winning records overall. And there's still half a conference season to go, so they have an opportunity to make some waves. So, maybe Florida could get it going. And for all of Florida's trials and tribulations, they are 4-3 in the league and 12-8. So, I don't know. It's kind of like an NBA playoff situation. I don't think any of those teams we mentioned are going to be real threats to make deep March runs, although who knows with the way this regular season's gone. But it's going to be fun to see which ones get in, because if you're right, let's say for the sake of argument it is six teams, it's not completely out out of the realm of possibility. You got to be talking about nine teams for those six spots.
Yeah, but and the difference is all right. Are those nine teams? Are they like, you know, back in the NBA days? Are those the LeBron of the Cavaliers, and you got the Golden State Warriors, the Spurs on the other side, or you got a bunch of 7-8 seeds, you know, that are going to get in? And I think that's what the league is. I mean, again, there's three teams that I think that can make a run. That's Auburn, Kentucky, and LSU at this point. Other than that, I mean, Frank Martin's squad at South Carolina can have some matchups. When Tennessee lost Lavonte Turner, that was just brutal for them because I think they definitely would have been a tournament team. The one thing that if somehow you catch Arkansas on a tough night, they've got some shooters, man. Isaiah Joe is incredible. Jimmy Whitford is pretty good. Mason Jones just put up 32 in a losing effort. They just, you know, they just have no depth inside. And if that's one of those teams, if they get picked up against a mid-major in the tournament and it's a bunch of 6'8 guys nobody's ever really heard of, but they're seniors, they could be in for a world of hurt. So it's interesting times here in this conference right now.
You know what, Peter? You hit it on the head, though. As I look around the country, even the Big Ten, who's regarded as the best league in the country right now, and probably deservedly so, how many teams would you think could really make a deep run there? I'm not even sure any. I mean, honest to God, Michigan State I have my doubts about, and they're the best team in the league. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say them. After that, in the standings, you've got Illinois, Rutgers, and Maryland. They all could do it, but are you confident saying they're going to make a deep run? I mean, Penn State and Iowa are the other two ranked teams. They're having terrific years. I'm not sure I'd be confident saying, oh, yeah, those guys are primed for a deep run. In the ACC, after Louisville, Duke, and Florida State, I'm not confident about very many people. So, I mean, right? Am I right? Every league is like right. You've got three, and everything else is roll the dice.
So, bigger question for you. You've followed the sport even closer than I. You've got a lot more college basketball knowledge than I have ever in my brain. So, with that being said, is that good for the sport? Because everybody talks about, oh, we want parity, and, oh, college football is only the one percenters. Well, okay, well, here we got a college basketball season that's wide open. I mean, Baylor's the number one team in the country, and people are looking at Baylor going, yeah, they're pretty good. So with that being said, like, do we need the bad guys? Do we need the superstar, rock star teams for the sport to thrive? Or do we need 20 teams that could actually win it? I mean, I think that's the question about the health of college basketball right now in 2020.
Well, I mean, Pat Forte and I had a little Twitter debate about that because he thinks, yeah, the opposite from me. Like, there's no super teams. There's no Zion. And so he's rolling his eyes like, well, it's, well, you know, ho-hum, nothing to see here. And I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, the one thing college football has always held over college basketball's head, and because I can't stand the way they crown a champion in football, but they would always say, all right, well, even if you hate our postseason, at least our regular season, every week matters. You better watch every week because, you know, every week is like a playoff week. Well, frankly, in basketball right now, it's the same thing. Because, I mean, the blue bloods for years that took for granted they were going to be in, are you sure Virginia's going to be in? Are you sure Carolina's going to be in? I wouldn't venture to say Carolina's not going to be in, in fact. You know, there's a whole bunch of teams like that. And the new guys, we're trying to find out which ones are for real. Is Rutgers? Rutgers. Are they for real? Is Penn State for real? So, I love the game, so maybe I'm biased. But, I mean, now, if the Final Four was, you know, Boise State and Youngstown or something, I think we'd all say, well, that's probably not most people looking at this and saying, well, that's a good thing. But I'll never forget, I told this on the show yesterday, Peter, when Billy Donovan won the second of his back-to-back championships, we were covering it, and I did the post-game interview, and he you know, he's trying to be modest and humble, which was nice, but I think he really meant that. He said, I think this thing was so competitive, if we'd played this tournament 10 times, I think we might very well have had 10 different winners. And you know what? I'm not so sure he was telling a lie, but I don't think anybody looks at Florida that year and says, oh, well, that was a fluke. They are not worthy champions. They were worthy champions. So that's what I think about this year. I think, you know, whatever format we get, I won't go 10, but I'll bet you if you played the tournament 6-7 times, you'd get 6-7 different winners. But that doesn't mean the team that wins is not a worthy winner and could be damned entertaining on the journey. So I don't think it's a bad thing.
And the last thing I'll add to that is I think it's great for the sport because coaches and players and programs need those breakthrough wins. So, you know, even if it's a tournament, you know, hey, we haven't got to the tournament in a while. Okay, now you are. Or now all of a sudden you win the Big Ten or you win the Big 12 or you win the SEC or at least make a run. That
You're
is
right.
huge for the development of belief that the athletic department is going to go, especially in the SEC. Hey, we're not going to give all our money to football. We're going to start putting some money into basketball where we can make headway. way. So I think we're on tap for a hell of a season, and that's why I'm actually loving this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, that's a point I hadn't even brought up, but you're spot on, because there used to be a lot of games when you got to conference play. Like, if you were sitting there like I am here in the sports book, and, you know, and I could watch a million different games, if you were home and you had the controller and you could flick, there would be, like, on any given night, there's probably, if there were six games on, there's probably three you didn't even want to pay attention to. You knew, well, those are going to be blowouts. And I went the other night, and like in the ACC, I was watching every game. All five games were decided by 4 points or less. And how bad is that? I mean, you know, you didn't used to have to watch Penn State. You didn't used to have to watch Rutgers in the Big Ten. You know, there's some teams in the SEC that you could have just written off and said, well, they're not going to be worthy of watching. The fewer teams you have like that, the better for the game it is. Is because every night you got a game worth watching. That's just, you know, I think you and I see it that way, and that's what I think you're seeing this year.
I think true college basketball fans are like that. I mean, the drive-by people who just said, oh, okay, where's Duke and, you know, where's Michigan State, North Carolina, or, you know, or Louisville? No, they don't look at it that way. A true hoop fan is going to look at it and go, just give me good quality basketball. Now, I don't know if the quality level is great this year, but at least the parity is good. So I'll take at least one of the two. I'd like a 2-2, but at least give me one of the two.
I agree with you. Peter, it's good to catch up with you again, my friend. Hopefully we'll visit soon. Thanks for the time.
Yes, sir. See ya.
All right, Peter Burns with us. I got to be honest. I'm looking at the odds to win the national championship, and I haven't seen them, so I don't want to be that hypocrite. San Diego State, Dayton, now they just took them down, are shorter odds to win the national championship than Louisville. That is, I mean, I don't know what to say about that. The team is 9-1 in the ACC. The three losses is only one in their own building. Two are away, and all are against the teams that are nationally ranked. You know, but, and again, no, you Big Blue, you want to scream at me, you go ahead, knock yourself out. But so much of this, especially now, is done by who already has the brand names. People bet the brand names they know. And if you're following college basketball this year, you got to be kidding me. There's no way the brand names are relatively, are anything even remotely near what they've been in the past. I mean, Penn State is 75-1. Here we go. Gonzaga is 9. Duke is 7-1. Kansas is 7-1. The good news is you can bet favorites and make some money this year. Duke 7-1. Kansas 7-1. The Zags are 9-1. Baylor's 10-1. Michigan State is 10-1. San Diego State's 15-1. Dayton is 16-1. Louisville's 18-1. 18-1, they're the eighth choice right now. What is it that people want them to do? The figure skating part of it? Kentucky and Butler are 20-1. West Virginia's 22-1. Arizona's 25-1. And I'll be honest with you, I saw them. Florida State's 30-1. Is nobody watching? Has nobody watched them? I mean, Florida State is the same odds as Ohio State right now. Ohio State has been in a free fall for a month and a half, and Florida State lost one game. They're 30-1. That's just because people don't think Florida State can win the national championship. They don't think it's a brand name. So they put teams ahead of them that are, I just find it hard to believe, are better than they are. I don't know what people are looking at there. But, you know, Locke said it on his show. That's how you make money, is if you could find the bets, the odds, the team, the player that is not the sexy one in the public's eye. And so, man, I'll grab that because that is, you know, way, way, the odds are way paying out much better for this team than they should be because everybody's putting their money. I used to say that about Churchill Downs. I love Pat Day as a person, and I have great respect for his ability, but he could have you know, ridden a lawn chair, and they would have bet him down to 5-2. And that's just because of his reputation. And he, you know, over time, he's earned that. But you started to say to yourself, you know, there are some other people who are not getting the bets made on them that – are deserving of that, and so you can make some money. And that's what I'm looking at college basketball right now. I mean, I don't know if Louisville's going to win, but I have seen in person, with the exception of San Diego State and Gonzaga, everybody in the top 10. And I mean, they're as good as anybody. Doesn't mean they're better than all of them. Doesn't mean they can come out and play their B game, but they're as good as any of those teams. Absolutely, without question. And, you know, that's why they're good enough. All of those teams can legitimately be disappointed if they don't make the Sweet 16. But you know, that's not a lock either, because there's going to be a team like in Arizona who's staggering around a little bit right now. But if they get it together, are really good, and because they may wind up with a low seed, you may wind up having to play them in the round of 32, and they could bounce somebody's ass, and then you're going home. So I don't even want to guarantee that. I mean, I really don't. But that's why I say getting the Sweet 16, you're playing the second weekend. You can. I know people love to yell at me for that, but the data, I don't want to use that word. That's, you know, Locke says first dibs on that. But the reality is, there's 355 teams. You're probably one of the last 16 in a year where there's this kind of parity. You've had a very, very successful season. Now, having said that, once you get to that round of 16, all of those teams are so closely aligned that there's nobody who should look at it and say, boy, you know what, it was great that we're here, but it's going to be hard for us to go further. You got as good a chance as anybody. So it is. This is the ultimate survive and advance year. I don't think there's any question about that. All right, I'm sick, but I'm happy to be here at Caesars, and you should come down and see us because it's a fantastic place. I had no idea what they had done here. The casino, they moved it. They're no longer on the boat. It's a standalone setup. It's beautiful. It really is a fun place to just hang out. And this sportsbook, the Caesars sportsbook where I'm sitting, is a great place for the sports fan. He's huge high-def televisions. They're previewing the Super Bowl on two of them. They're showing the European Golf Tour on the one in the middle, and there's betting kiosks. It's just a great, great place. So check them out here at Caesars Sportsbook. We'll take a break, and I'll try to decongest a bit, and you can do the same.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.